Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios. Presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. A radio.com sports station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The Score! Mully and Hall.
Fantastic, fantastic show.
Chicago sports talk for your morning.
Oh, man, I really wanted to talk to him.
Appreciate the love, big homie.
Really, right now for us, everything's on the table in regard to the quarterback situation.
We've gone over this quarterback position in a lot of different ways. We've talked about the Bears sort of being outside this entire process because they're not the team that has the kind of firepower that's going to shake the market. And we don't even know if some of these big name guys would be released. There are great options for the Bears if they're available. At this point, they're not. There are great options for the Bears if they have the firepower. At this point, they do not. They're going through the options. They're in a process of waiting to see what happens. Then they'll fall back to their own guy. Then they'll have to go into the draft. It's almost as if this is a living entity. The quarterback pursuit is this giant monster of a thing that is being fed every day by rumor, by innuendo, but really, ultimately, it's a phantom. You have impractical ideas and then the practical ideas. And none of the practical ideas, David, really appeal that much to anyone.
No, because you can't get excited about things that don't represent a obvious upgrade. And that's what is holding back any enthusiasm, because the most exciting day of the Bears offseason was when we had the report that Russell Wilson had the Bears on his list of teams he would consider being traded to. That's a pretty low bar to clear. And so, yeah, the practical solutions are Alex Smith, Sam Darnold, or Marcus Mariota, which are the three quarterbacks that Ian Rappaport mentioned and linking to the Bears yesterday. That is the latest snapshot of where they are. Tomorrow, maybe that changes. Maybe somebody else gets involved. You just wonder how a NFL franchise goes into this offseason knowing how badly they need a quarterback and how much everyone is fixated on that reality. And it sounds as if they have approached this like we have.
Mike Mulligan and David Hall taking you up to 9 o'clock on 670 The Score.
Okay, let's go.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. It is the 4th of March. It is a lovely and wondrous Thursday in the fine city of Chicago. And, the Bulls have a victory under their belt. They'll go into the break as winners, David. Good morning.
Morning, Mully. Happy Thursday. Yeah, the Bulls definitely held on last night. They never make it that easy, and they beat the Pelicans. Fun game to watch. They opened up a big lead. They survived down the stretch. They did some things that make you scratch your head a little bit. But, a good way to end a Wednesday, heading toward the weekend, getting ready for baseball. A lot of things going on. Where do you want to start?
I think we should start with the Bulls, because I think that there was a nice cold dose of reality given to you by Billy Donovan after the game. The Bulls get themselves a victory. Billy Donovan asked about being 16-18 at the break, and he simply says, we have a losing record right now. And I think that is something to keep in mind. It feels like they have a winning record because they're not as god-awful as they have been, but they do have a losing record at the break. And I think it's important not to become a little delusional about where you fit in when you're not a winning team. And it's going to be difficult. They come back, we know, on March 11th, and they've got five home games in a row, and it starts with the 76ers, and the 76ers are pretty good, and they have teams, five teams that made the playoffs a year ago. So it's not going to be a simple task of just rolling the ball out onto the floor. They've got to continue to get better.
Yeah, I think there's a balance to strike. I like and wasn't surprised that that was the tone he wanted to set heading into the break, because he's got a young team, and with young teams who have struggled in showing they understand how to win and how to close out victories, you do worry about maybe getting a little bit ahead of themselves and believing they've arrived before they're there in terms of the kind of polish that you want from a winning team. So you set the right tone. You remind everybody that you're not satisfied. You are encouraged, but not satisfied. And you send them away for some time to get away, everybody but Zach LaVine. And so that's the way that you want your players to leave after a victory. I think the fan base can be encouraged and excited a little bit, though, Molly. I think that there are ways to look at this Bulls 16-18 record and, you know, and be, yeah, sure, have self-discipline. You haven't really accomplished anything as a franchise. You still are on the way back. But, man, is this an improvement. And boy, have they come a long, long way in the past year.
I don't think there's any shadow of a doubt about that. And I think, though, that with that improvement and with the new administration, the new head coach, you need to have higher aspirations than, gosh, the Bulls are competitive. The Bulls, as they've talked about, have lost games they should have won. I don't know that they've won that many games they should have lost. I think they're a team that is more likely to lose a close game than win a close game if you just look at the numbers. And I really want to see them enter into that sort of realm of mediocrity where they're just above 500 or they're at least ending the season on a higher note. I don't like the fact that they have a losing record. I don't like the fact that we kind of celebrate the fact that they're better. They're still not even remotely good enough. And I hope that the evaluation process leads to action. I would like to see them make a move or two or do something that makes them a little different. And maybe I'm just dissatisfied with the NBA game. Maybe I'm just tired of the way the sport is played right now. And I've heard a lot of different people complain about it and different suggestions like ridding yourself of the 3-point line. Yeah, I mean, there are wild and crazy ideas. Not moving it back, getting rid of it. And then you would create more basketball. You would create a different style of game. You know, we're seeing a lot of 3-point shooting on a lot of these teams. And you know, when you go into a game against a team like New Orleans that doesn't defend the 3-point line very well, there's a path to victory against a team like that. As good as some of their young players might be, as fun as it might be to see Zion Williamson, there's still a path to victory. And that is to jack up the tray. And I don't know that, I'm not going to call that boring basketball, but I don't know that that's kind of what I want to spend my time watching. It is such a different game. And, when we hit a break, we ought to take a pause and think about how can we make this game better.
Well, everybody's playing that way. I don't disagree necessarily with the way that you describe, you know, the trends and the way the game has gone and how enjoyable not enjoyable it is or isn't. But that's the way everybody plays now. And I think that you look at the Bulls and they have adapted, and that's kind of the way they are. And everybody they play is sort of the same style now and have the same sort of defensive tendencies. And so you just try to keep up. And I don't think anybody's necessarily celebrating 16-18, but I do think that you feel encouraged and pretty good about the direction they're headed. And certainly, you know things. This is a season of evaluation, as everybody keeps reminding us. And in this season that they've evaluated to this point, they know that they have a coach that's, you know, demanding and competent and credible. they know they have an emerging star in Zach LaVine, who has proven a lot this year. And, you know, they drafted well. So that's encouraging that the next series of moves, as you build around this core, whatever the core may be, you trust the people evaluating the talent, because the first early signs are they know what they're doing. The Bulls know what they're doing. And while you don't want to, you know, get carried away, you look around the league, and that's a good thing. It's a good place to be, and you'd much rather be there than where you were. And that's progress.
Speaking of progress, what did you think of the Cubs with a couple of their new players showing up? And kind of fun to see Zach Davies pitch. Kind of fun to see Jock Peterson hit a homer. And both those things happened. Never fun to see a draw, but it's the preseason, and we know that if it's 20 pitches, you can stop playing in a particular inning.
Anytime you want. Yeah,
that's right. So
just walk away. I thought that Zach Davies was really good, and it's a good way to announce your arrival on a new team. Jock Peterson, same sort of thing. These are the 2021 Cubs, and Jock Peterson is going to get an opportunity to do what he didn't have an opportunity to do in L.A. I think that's the idea going in. Play every day and not have to worry about those splits. And it's a good way to say I'm ready for that challenge. And he is – you like it because he was motivated to become a Cub. And the more you hear about it, he's excited to be here. It's an intangible thing, but it's not insignificant. You know, Zach Davies – you know, didn't have he was traded, so it's less of a choice, but you like both of those guys because they have done it before.
Yeah, I think it is significant that a guy wants to be someplace, and yeah. I think it is significant that even, you know, as a veteran guy, he's still looking to kind of bust out and prove himself a little bit, if you will, because of the fact that of the way things went in L.A. with their multiple all-stars and their exceptional payroll and all the rest of it. You know, he wants a different role, and he's got a chance for one here in Chicago. So that's kind of cool. I thought that Zach Davies looked great for himself. I want to be careful how I say this. He was a little bit kind of shorter, slighter than I thought he was. He just watching him on the mound, and I haven't watched a ton of him, but I've seen him play before. He, you know, he really is kind of a smaller version of Kyle Hendricks, if that's humanly possible, because Kyle is a fairly tall guy, but a very thin and kind of, he's the professor. And then you look at a guy who is kind of the professor light, and you see, wow, you know, he's not quite, I mean, if that guy was walking down the street, if you ran into that guy in a store, you would not say, my God, look at that unbelievable professional athlete.
You're saying that Zach Davies would fit right into the faculty lounge, right? So he would just right there.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, right at the conference table, talking with the other professors on the faculty. Yeah, you know, he's not imposing. We're never going to use that word to describe Zach Davies, but he can be baffling, and he is very similar in style to Kyle Hendricks. And he, you know, he is a guy who maybe, you know, when we talk about who the number two starter is and if Jake Arrieta can be that guy, Zach Davies may have been the obvious answer all along. And he certainly would be if he continues to do what he did yesterday in just a couple innings. So that was a good first step.
No question about it. The White Sox, they fell to the Royals 6-5 in six innings. They did score three runs in the first, and it was Zach Collins that had his first home run of the spring. So it's good to see a left-handed power bat that maybe could do some catching, maybe, and a guy that looked okay, Yermin Mercedes. It was weird to see the two of them in the same lineup, to be honest with you, but he had a couple of hits. And Lance Lynn goes against the Giants today, so we'll get a chance to, I believe, not see Lance. Can I say this, David? It was surreal to hear hear Jason Benetti's voice on a Cubs game yesterday.
I was wondering.
Didn't that get you a little? Wasn't that like, well, hey, wow, that's
you're,
weird.
You're saying that as a Sox fan. I wonder how Cubs fans felt hearing the voice of the White Sox, one of the voices of the White Sox, call their game nationally. And Mully, that was no short game. You know,
it oh was like, my God.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. If he gets, I hope he gets paid by the hour, you know, because he was there for a long time. And did it trigger any Cubs fans hearing Jason Benetti's pleasant voice preside over their exhibition game? Because did a nice job, but it was a bit jarring. Maybe that's overstating it, but it was a bit weird. It was weird.
Well, yeah, I mean, I had to like double check a couple times. Like, what is the uniform? But David, okay. I'm going to say this. I doubt a lot of Cub fans. I think baseball fans would recognize guys that. Those of us that watch both sides of town would recognize his voice and understand that dichotomy. I think there's a lot of Cub fans that watch the Cubs, and I think that they probably are unaware of his voice. I think people like us would be more likely to be like double checking because we watch both games and we know how everyone sounds.
Yeah, but what a bizarro baseball world in Chicago yesterday with Jason Benetti on the Cubs game on television and Len Casper doing the Sox game on the radio. It's like, what has happened to the world in 2021? Did a nice job, and he, you know, he does have just the insight into the Cubs just from having the Chicago proximity, and he, you know, he's here enough to know, even though he pays attention to the Sox, he has a working knowledge, a good institutional knowledge of the Cubs, and that showed. That came through.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, the guy's a professional, no question about it. I haven't heard Len yet. Have you been tuning in? I usually am only listening if I'm in my car or if I'm doing something outside, kind of. I don't really have the game on the radio unless it's the Cubs game on the Score, which, of course, I always
very briefly, when I was driving to the park the other day for a run, I heard him a little bit, and he sounded like Len Casper.
Did he really?
Yeah.
I'm very curious now. I want to know how that's different.
Sounded
if that's
fine,
different.
But my afternoons are spent with Danny Parkins and Matt Spiegel most of the time. So
that's right. Of course they are. That's where we all spend our time. That's the place to
and
be.
Shane. Shane.
The Blackhawks, Shane, now is he now the third guy on that show?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, I suppose we have Dustin. They have Shane, and you'll hear Dustin next. We're going to get to the 5 at 5. Dustin will join us, and he's not Shane, but he is Dustin. He's very unique. We'll do that next. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station. It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw starts now.
As the Bulls' season of evaluation hits pause at the All-Star break, what is the most important conclusion management reached to this point? What's been the biggest disappointment?
The biggest disappointment is the usual disappointment, which is players not being available, not getting a chance to see all their weapons at once. That is just standard operating procedure with the Bulls. I think that the most important conclusion that – let me ask something. This occurred to me yesterday, and I this is an absurdity, but is there any possibility that if Otto Porter Jr. comes back, I don't know why he's always on my mind, if he did come back and play, that you could move him for something or just move him to move him? I would think if you're willing to eat some of that salary, he can be a useful player. He could help a team, and if you could get something for nothing, that might be something to do, because I think one of the conclusions that management has to reach is that Otto Porter Jr. is not going to be a part of this thing moving forward, that he's not. His availability is a huge problem. I'm curious to see when Markkanen comes back, and supposedly he will after the, you know, hopefully on March 11th. I'd like to see how he and Zach LaVine play together, how that works out, because if it doesn't, then that's another guy that, you know, I don't know, sign and trade, whatever you want to do. That's another guy that you probably have to look at moving forward here. I think Zach LaVine has been a revelation. I think he's here to stay. I feel bad for him that his His career numbers are so awful. God, I mean, it's just terrible how many losing seasons he's had to go through in his, what is this, his seventh year in the NBA. So I hope that what they've learned to this point is a good idea of who to keep and who to let go and who might bring value and who might deserve a good dumping. And by that, I just mean getting rid of.
That's not absurd at all. Yeah, Otto Porter Jr., that's a very good point. And he might be able to help a contender. You know, these are teams that would be looking to add, you know, shooting and depth and spacing. So that would be something, if they could take him off the Bulls' hands, that would be addition by subtraction just because of the salary. And that's a burden. And I don't think he's going to help on the floor. And I don't think he's going to be part of their future. Okay, so we're at the pause. And you take a step back and you're the Bulls. And you do look at this, the big picture thoughts. Where are you as a franchise and how far have you come? Number one, you got a coach. You found a coach. And I know that sounds like maybe something that we have assumed all along here in the first half, but hiring Billy Donovan made everything else that followed possible. The development of Patrick Williams, the emergence of Zach LaVine, the way that your team plays together, you mix the veterans that you signed and that added and just have been revived with the youth that you need to serve. So I think that's number one. You found a coach, a good one, and I think that's key. Number two, obviously, I think that the kind of paired with that, you believe that Zach LaVine is a guy who can be your one, who can be your star. Now, do you need another one? Absolutely. Do you need somebody who's better than Zach? Probably, maybe. But it's a good place to start when you have somebody to pair with someone you trust to win and be part of winning basketball. And that's the one thing that Billy Donovan said, that Zach LaVine has shown in the first half of the season that he can impact winning in a way that, frankly, they didn't know over the summer. And they didn't know as they sort of built toward and moved toward this point. Those are the two biggest developments to me. The biggest disappointment, generally speaking, you're right. The availability of the lack of availability is the biggest problem. Specifically, Lauri Markkanen. I have been a big Lauri Markkanen guy since he came into the league. I continue to have confidence that he could maybe get it, but it's with an asterisk, and it's not really overwhelming confidence. It's very reserved, cautious optimism, I guess. He's got to play. And I think he's playing for his Bulls' future in the second half. Because if they have to decide either Wendell Carter Jr. or Lauri Markkanen moving forward, and they may come to that conclusion at some point, you want to give them something to think about, and Lauri Markkanen's got to do that in the second half.
Well, last time we had an All-Star break, it was in Chicago. And we skipped a year because of what's been going on. And if we're talking about that management, I think they can now sit back and kind of exhale and say, we made the right move. Maybe it was a hard move to make, but you know, accepting John Paxson's resignation and moving on from that group was the right thing to do, because it seems like things are at least headed in the right direction. As we've talked about many times, they are watchable. They are enjoyable. They are worth investing 2.5 hours of your night when they play to watching them. You don't need to watch a DIY show or a cooking show, in my case, instead of watching the Bulls, which is what I would have done in the past. That's what I would have done in the past instead, or watched a college basketball game. Now, I still may watch a college basketball game ahead of the Bulls, especially this time of year, but that's just me. As far as a disappointment, I'll just keep piling on Lauri Markkanen. I'm not a fan, not going to be a fan. I hope that he doesn't get a $90 million deal from the Bulls unless he all of a sudden just comes out and has some kind of finish magic in the second half of the season. And as far as, you know, like maybe during the All-Star break it'd be the time, but you guys would know better than me. But if we put together a list of trades made by Chicago sports teams or free agents picked up by Chicago sports teams, and if you looked at what they did on the field of play versus the dollars they were paid, I mean, Otto Porter Jr. is getting paid like a 1B in the league, and he has done absolutely nothing except collect checks. Now, he seems like a really nice guy. He's not a jerk. He's not a bad guy. But he's just not available. And I don't, at this point, I don't even know if getting him back in the mix would be a good thing for this team, because he's definitely not going to be part of the future. At least Lowry is still maybe, but there's no chance Otto Porter Jr. is back in next year's edition.
That's a good question, Dave. I think,
how do you feel hearing Jets GM Joe Douglas, who spent the 2015 season as the Bears director of college scouting under Ryan Pace, tell reporters he will answer calls pertaining to a trade for Sam Darnold? If the Jets have decided to draft Zach Wilson, does that mean the Bears get Darnold? What would you give up for him?
That's a really good question and a really good connection with Douglas and the Bears, and they're open for business. And why wouldn't they be? So Zach Wilson, will get to some of the quarterback rankings later, but if they are in a position to take him, then he becomes the next big thing in New York, the way that Darnold was just a couple years ago. What would you give up for Sam Darnold? I wouldn't overpay for Sam Darnold. I don't know that you would have to give up a one. I wouldn't give up a one for Sam Darnold. I would, you know, a conditional two. Maybe you, that's where you start. Did they want any players off your roster, perhaps? I don't know. What the going rate, I think it would have to be competitive. There would be other teams interested. I think there are. And Joe Douglas's phone will ring, and there will be some intriguing offers. But if you're the Bears and you are at the point that we heard the other day, everything on the table, you don't want to get too carried away, because as you expand your range of options, it should limit or diminish how willing you are, your willingness to give up draft picks for, you know, for a quarterback. If the quarterbacks are interchangeable in your mind, if they're that interchangeable and you're not getting special necessarily, I would give up a first round draft pick for special. I think we've had that conversation in the Carson Wentz context. And if he was able to reclaim his, you know, past and do some of those things and play to MVP level, you would be more willing to give up a first round draft pick. That's a separate debate. I don't know about Sam Darnold. I don't know about Marcus Mariota. I don't know if these guys fit that criteria enough to where I would be willing to give up a first round draft pick. Actually, I know I wouldn't. So it would be conditional, second or third, maybe throw in a player, but I wouldn't overpay.
That's very difficult. I think they need to win. And I'm not sure they can win with what they have. I'm not sure that I see them as a winning team if Nick Foles ends up being the starter. So if I have a chance to be different, would I give up a first-round pick? I have to be different, because I can't go into the season with the same thing after promising that I was going to do anything possible at the quarterback position. I would prefer not to give up a first-round pick for Sam Darnold. I would be willing to give up a second-round pick and maybe a pick next year, and try to put together a package that would appease them and maybe hold on to my pick. You know, you really want to get that tackle out of the first round, and, you know, you're going to have to keep as many – you've got, what, six draft picks. You got to keep as many as you can in order to make this team better, because you need better. But I think they need a quarterback, man. I think that if they have to, they might have to give up a first-rounder for a guy like this, just because I don't know how they get better. And different might confuse people into thinking better. And it might juice up everyone to think something that isn't really there. I know that sounds crazy, but they've got to win their jobs back this year. And that means they got to do whatever is possible, whatever is necessary, to try to get people on board, to try to create the impression. If they come back with Nick Foles as the starter, can you imagine? We'll feel like the season is over before it begins. So, and I don't know how the players would feel about that, but that's a danger. You know, it seemed like as the season went on, and as Nick Foles and the whole ridiculous saga of him and Matt Nagy, and don't let anyone fool you, it was a saga. They were yelling at each other on the sideline. They were getting to know how to call plays. That was a train wreck, and it looked like the defense was affected by it, quite frankly. It looked like the defense, whether anyone wants to talk about the great culture, it looked like they kind of stopped playing hard, or they just gave up at some point. They came back a little bit in the playoffs, but they went through a patch there whether anyone wants to admit it or not, that looked like it took a toll. Those early games and everything they had to do to win, and then the whole Nick Foles thing was a train wreck. If you come back with that, I think you're going to see that their culture isn't what they believe it is, that their collaboration didn't do anything to make them better. So I think they got to do anything to get different, and I hope that different is better. And I'm not enthusiastic about it, but I would probably try to keep my job if I were in their boat.
All right, I agree. Different would be better. I'm not totally as down on Foles as you are, Mully, but different would be better. But I'm asking, this was not the first time, it won't be the last, but I'm confused. Why, if the Jets drafted a quarterback, that has to make Sam Darnold available. They aren't in a position where they can have a early first-round pick and Sam Darnold on the roster. So why in the world would the Bears have to give up that big of a price tag for that guy? I mean, maybe they're competing with other teams, but not to that point. And again, I am still of the belief
that's
it's different. But different, okay? Listen, somebody is going to be available for nothing other than cash once this quarterback carousel stops. And let's have the Bears take that different. I think that this group, this vineyard of quarterbacks are all about the same. That are, again, I don't believe that Deshaun Watson, and I really don't believe Russell Wilson are actually possibilities, in my opinion. But the rest of the guys that are on our list and probably the Bears list are all from the same vineyard. That they're all comparable. And different would be better, I think, for everybody. And I'm just ready to take who's ever different that doesn't cost you a first or a second round draft pick.
Oh, boy. Good question.
NBC Sports analyst Chris Sims, a former NFL quarterback, ranked BYU's Zach Wilson ahead of Clemson's Trevor Lawrence on his list of quarterbacks available in the NFL draft. How much credence do you give Sims' opinion? Is there any one team out there that shares his opinion? Does Mac Jones ranking third on his list make you feel any better about the Bears possibly drafting Jones at number 20?
Mac Jones doesn't do a lot for me. I may be completely wrong about this, but I've said this a couple times. I'd draft him at number 20 in a heartbeat if he came with that wide receiving core. In fact, I'd move up to get him because that's a really good wide receiving core. Now, by all accounts, he's an accurate passer. And I think when we've seen him play, he's an accurate passer. Having said that, the guy is a statue in the pocket. He is a pocket passer. He moves. What is his 40 time? It was super slow-mo. He moves at a different speed. He makes Nick Foles look like he's fast. I would be cautious about bringing a guy like that on board. And then ask yourself, how do Alabama quarterbacks generally fare in the NFL? Oftentimes, those are guys that don't make mistakes and are surrounded by an abundance of talents. They get whatever parade All-American you want on a yearly basis. They usually have one of the best draft classes, and they usually fill the NFL with players. So that worries me a little bit. Now, I haven't sat down, and I don't know that Chris Sims has, and broken down the tape of every quarterback and put everyone in line. They will fall in a certain way. I would expect if the general consensus is 1, 2, 3 with these three players, then they'll long be off the board before the Bears pick. I would expect that there could be four quarterbacks gone by the 12th pick in the draft. And you're going to be looking more at a project projection type thing. And to me, that's what Mac Jones is. I don't know that the Bears have ready the kind of support system that he would be used to or that he would succeed in. So that I have no faith in him being available for the Bears at number 20. And I don't think that they're going to be able to get a quarterback. I think that there could be a player that falls a little bit because if indeed it's true that five quarterbacks go in the first round, well, that's just extraordinary. When I think of Chris Sims and I think of this list, I think of it as a list. It's like Mel Kiper's list or McShay's list, or whoever, name a guy. They all put together their list. Now, the way they do it is some of them are free-thinking men of the traveling people, and they'll go around and they'll look and they'll try to determine. But most likely, the way they do it is the way some scouts do it, which is by uniformity. Hey, I think this guy is good. Do you like that guy? Oh, Bob said that Joe's pretty good. And then you line them up based on this uniformity of opinion. This is called phone scouts, guys that are on the phone double-checking their work with someone else because they don't want to hand in the wrong answer. So you want to make sure that you have kind of an idea of how everyone lines up. I think that what Chris Sims had to say is interesting if you're at the top of the draft. But the Bears are nowhere near there, and I think that all this noise about these players is probably only going to be relevant in Chicago if they get on their horse, they put together a package of picks, including next year's number one and the year after that, and move up from 20. It's a long way to go, and it's going to be very costly, and I'm trying and I'm hoping that they avoid learning about these lists because they need to look at it differently and not kind of concentrate on the top four or five guys.
I think I have Richard Todd calling from Tuscaloosa about the Alabama quarterback comment. Would like a word, Mully. You have to go way back to find an Alabama quarterback that succeeded in the NFL and guys who stuck around for a while. Tua hopes to be that guy as well down in Miami. But it's a point well taken. You know, Mac Jones has a lot of people who like what he has to offer. I think he's somebody you have to fall in love with if you are a fan base and if you are the Bears at 20. But let's get back to the main reason this stood out is not because it's your regular run-of-the-mill pre-draft list that comes out in March just before NFL free agency. I've got a lot of time for Chris Sims. I love the fact that he's not afraid to be wrong. I think his opinions are based on research and information and the insight that he has from being an NFL quarterback. He talks to a lot of people around the league. One of his best friends is Kyle Shanahan. So that, you know, qualifies him to be a good judge of talent. I would not want to be the guy that ranks Trevor Lawrence second in anything. I would not want to be that guy any more than I would have wanted to be the guy who put projected Ryan Leaf to have a better career than Peyton Manning or Mitch Trubisky to have a better career than Patrick Mahomes or Deshaun Watson. This is going to leave a mark because I think Trevor Lawrence is the best quarterback to come out since Andrew Luck. I'm not exactly on an island there. And I think this is what you, when you're on an island is where Chris Sims is with this opinion, which I think is why it does stand out. It's gotten a lot of attention around the league. Zach Wilson is a tremendous prospect. You know how I feel about Zach Wilson just from watching him and studying him since last, you know, October. He has emerged. It's great. I don't project, as much as I love the possibility of Zach Wilson being a great NFL quarterback, I don't think he's going to be better than Trevor Lawrence. So then you take that into the context of everyone else on the list. I think Mac Jones is not the third best quarterback available, just based on what you hear, based on people you talk to, based on what you see. Justin Fields fifth. Maybe. But I have to say, if he's the fifth quarterback taken, I think a lot of people will be surprised. So there's a lot there to digest. Trey Lance, number six. If he's there at 20, the Bears are going to have a hard time ignoring him on the board just based on his potential. I don't know if I like that idea for a team that needs to win now, but he's got a lot of talent. So a lot of respect for Chris Sims. This stood out because this is not a list you're going to forget because there aren't very many people out there that think Trevor Lawrence is the second best quarterback available.
Listen, if anything else, it's interesting. It's a very interesting comment. But see, David, this is where I'll agree and disagree with the whole Sims thing. If he's wrong, people will forget. Because he didn't say Trevor Lawrence will be fifth. You know, he's got him second. But if he's right about this kid out of BYU, everybody will remember it and pat him on the back. I have to say, though, there is so much of this. There are very few quarterbacks, there are very few any position players in the NFL that can go to any team and succeed. There is so much of this that has to do with your head coach, the scheme, the players around you, the city, you as the player being able to adapt to a new environment. And these are all things that we don't know how these younger guys are going to do when they get in their new city. I mean, Trevor, this could be a disaster, and my fingers are crossed for my buddy Urban Meyer down in Jacksonville. This whole thing could be a disaster for him. It already has started off on a bad foot, okay? And he can even have the great Trevor Lawrence, who isn't second in anything, and they might stink out loud, and he might not be as good as possible. I mean, we're never going to know, but how do we know that Patrick Mahomes would just be eh if he would have gotten drafted by the Bears? Do we know that he would have succeeded here in Chicago? Are we sure that the Bears wouldn't have screwed that up? I'm not so sure that the Bears would not have screwed that up. David shaking his head, yes and no. He's not sure either. But
I'm saying, yes, he would be good in Chicago, and no, the Bears could not screw up Patrick Mahomes.
Okay. All right. I just wanted it good. Okay. Listen, I love these kinds of lists, and everybody cares about the quarterback. The other thing about the love affair of this year's quarterback class, if true, I haven't studied it enough, next year's class supposedly does not even have one first-round talent. As far as, like, because you don't know, like, the sophomores that are eligible. Like, as far as juniors to seniors, there's, like, not one guy out there that's first-round talent. So that's why this year everybody's making this big run, because there's nothing coming, supposedly. So we'll have to wait and see. But listen, of course, if there's one of those five or six guys sitting there at 20, the Bears are going to have an interesting decision to make.
The most pressing question is...
Zach Collins went 2-for-3 with a homer while filling the DH spot for the White Sox in a 6-5 loss to Kansas City yesterday. That's 2 days running for a home run from the DH after Andrew Vaughn hit one Tuesday. If Collins is to make the team, is it as a backup catcher or DH? Could you see him as the primary backup catcher?
I doubt it. I doubt that he would be the primary backup catcher. I think that Jonathan LaCroix's past means that he could, as a receiver, as a framer, as somebody who has handled pitchers well, it probably means he could hit 200 and still have a roster spot, at least through the All-Star break. They're going to give these guys a chance, or maybe, you know, a few months. I don't see Zach Collins being your backup catcher. I just don't know. That doesn't mean that he won't be on the roster, although it was very interesting to hear Tony La Russa weigh the pros and cons of having three catchers versus two catchers. Zach Collins, if his bat is lively, I think he would make the team and make that decision a harder one because of his ability offensively. Now, and he gives you another option because of where he, you know, left-handed bat, that's pretty appealing. So I think that when you talk about those possibilities, yeah, you can see why there's an appeal, and he's off to a very good start. That said, Andrew Vaughn, I think, it's his job to lose the way it looks. I'd be very curious to see how he continues to evolve and develop and how they choose to, you know, make those decisions on a daily basis on the lineup card. It's a good day to talk to Chris Getz. So looking forward to that at 8:00, because back to back, you have guys that they have drafted and guys who are developing, young hitters who are potent and dangerous, homering for the White Sox. So as much as we feel good about the veterans that they have gone out and gotten, the youth is being served. And Zach Collins, let's hope he finds a role, because there have been questions since he has come up about his defense, but I think there are fewer questions about his bat, which could make decisions about his future very, very interesting.
Yeah, I personally don't think of him as a catcher. I hate to say that. I know that he's Dylan Cease. He caught him in the minor league, so he was his personal catcher at some point last year. I think that that's always been the question about whether or not he can be a good receiver. And I think that Jonathan LaCroix will be the backup catcher. I think I always kind of thought they'd keep three, because I think that Zach Collins has a left-handed power bat, and you can always use that in Major League Baseball. So I was expecting, when Tony La Russa was rattling off the DHs, I thought I'd hear his name, and I thought I'd hear Yermin Mercedes, who is, of course, also a catcher, at least nominally. But they're kind of similar. They're guys that you wouldn't trust as the backstop if you were, you know, entering an MLB season, but they can do that as well as be a professional hitter. At least that was the thinking. So I think if he's going to make this team, he has to do it with his bat. I think that if he can hit and then maybe you get more opportunity. You know, I'm not going to say this is Kyle Schwarber, but I think that that he needs to be able to hit in order to be on this team, period, end of story. And the idea that he can also catch is a huge bonus. But it's just that. It's not – I have a hard time seeing him as the primary backup. I don't think they would have even bothered bringing LaCroix in any way if they didn't want him to be the backup catcher.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's got to hit. He definitely has to hit. And so it was good to see what he did yesterday. You want that left-handed right. power. Absolutely right. He's insurance. I mean, listen, I think this team's got five guys as candidates for a rotating DH. But I don't know if that's a recipe for success, having a five-guy carousel of backups. And again, we, you know, yesterday, Mully, and we've talked about it, and I know I've been harping on it before they even got to camp, who's going to be the backup catcher for the White Sox? And then Grandal not being ready to go right off the bat amplifies that a little bit. So we have to see what's what and who's who. Really, it's very, very important. And I think, though, this is an opportunity to see Collins behind the plate, right? This is a good time for him to get those reps. As we'd like to say, maybe this is why there should be nine-inning games, so that you could get guys more reps in actual games that, air quotes, matter. But, yeah, I mean, Zach Collins is more about the bat than the glove. So I think this is one of those TBDs. But on the flip side, I mean, if LaCroix can't hit his weight, do you want – are they in a position – is that good – is his catching good enough to have that weigh out the terribleness of his bat? So I think that's something you have to decide, which part is more important. This one is a TBD.
Great question.
Whose home run was better for the Cubs yesterday, Jock Peterson's or Anthony Rizzo's, and why? Which guy will hit more homers this year? Will that guy lead the Cubs in that category?
You know, I think it's the more important one was just Jock Peterson, because we've seen Anthony Rizzo hit home runs, and we hadn't seen Jock Peterson dinger up to that point. So I think that that made it significant, just because he hadn't done it and it's the first one in the Cubs uniform, blah, blah, blah. I don't know that situationally it was that much better and whatever, and Rizzo seemed to go farther. I don't know if we're going to measure him up or how you want to play it, but you know, I think it's fascinating to think about Jock Peterson this year, because, you know, there's a guy that signed a one-year deal. I know Anthony Rizzo's contract's coming up, but he's got a lot of time put in with the Cubs, and he's got, you know, you just have a feeling that he will be a Cub for life. It's just hard to believe that they wouldn't want to get to him in some fashion and give him enough money to keep him around here. I think Rizzo is a guy that you know exactly what to expect from. When we think about him, he's usually third in the lineup. I think they opened last year, they had him second in the lineup, right? They tried to experiment with the Rizzo thing. I gotta tell you, I think of Anthony Rizzo not as necessarily the big home run hitter. I know that he has hit 32 home runs occasionally in his career, but I think of him as the guy that is different than the other guys, that is more patient at the plate, that is willing to take a walk, that can do other things than simply hit home runs. And, you know, that is a great quality to have in any lineup. Jock Peterson, you know, he's not going to be, you know, by all accounts, he's going to be the full-time outfielder. He's not going to be in some sort of a rotation. So that means he's going to spend more time against left-handed pitchers than he has previously in his career, and it'll be very interesting to see how that works out for him. Again, he's just on a one-year deal. He really wants to get back on the market and think that baseball's now going to be expanding and they're going to have more opportunities for a guy. So there is a mercenary aspect to it. As a result, I'm going to go with Jock Peterson with more home runs than Anthony Rizzo.
Death taxes and Rizzo having 30 homers and 100 RBIs. I mean, those are the things that you count on and you can always count on based on the back of his baseball card. But Jock Peterson is here to hit home runs. And the last full season that Jock Peterson played in 2019, he hit 36 of them. And he hit one every 12 and a half times he was at the plate. That's a lot. And that's something that you're paying for. That's why he's here. And he's motivated to hit even more. You think he'll hit even more at Wrigley Field if given the opportunity to play every day, as he will be given. So I think that Anthony Rizzo could still have a fine year and give you your 30 and 100 and play the gold glove defense at first base. But I think Jock Peterson's going to hit more home runs, because if you substitute in that question, the name of Kyle Schwarber going into most seasons when Schwarber and Rizzo were with the Cubs, you probably would lean towards Schwarber just because he was a more prodigious home run hitter. And I think that Jock Peterson is here to be a better defensive version of Kyle Schwarber. So I think it will be Jock Peterson. Yesterday's home runs, both were nice. I think you saw Rizzo kind of lean into it. It was a back leg. He got planted and he delivered, and it went a mile. Jock Peterson was better though, because it was his first, and it was like, okay, I get it. I don't miss Schwarber quite as much as I did before that. And boy, this is a taste of things to come, a glimpse into the future. And I think he's going to have a big year and hit more home runs than Anthony Rizzo. Both guys could have good seasons for the Cubs. And if they do, yeah, boy, that would be a welcome for that offense.
It's a good question, but it is an easy question to answer. And it is Jock, because of the fact that your comment, death taxes and Anthony Rizzo consistently since he's been a Cub, right? I think combined, these guys will hit for 50 home runs. Maybe one's got 30, one's got 20, 25, 25. It's Jock, though, because he's taken the place of an idol. If you're a Cubs fan, you love Kyle Schwarber, and this will help ease his not being around. Now, again, we can argue all day, do these games matter? Do these at-bats matter? Blah, blah, blah. But for the moment, and I'm always living for the moment, right now, today, at this minute, it's 5:54. Ray wants us to break. But at this moment, yes, the Jock Peterson home run was no doubt more important than the Anthony Rizzo home run yesterday.
312-644-6767. Is Schwarber a Cubs idol? Is that what you said? An idol? That year.
Again, well, yes, that year where they won the World Series for the first time in over 100 years.
Right.
Without Kyle Schwarber, they do not win
the World Series.
He is an idol.
Okay. So he's an idol.
Period.
Then why didn't you keep the idol? That's very interesting.
That's a great question. Because Jock Peterson's going to play a little bit better left field. We'll see. Okay. Listen, everybody, if you want to talk about what I will have my eyes on the most as far as who's gone and who's here, forget about John Lester and Jake Arrieta. My eyes and my ears are going to be on what's going on with Kyle Schwarber and what's going on with Jock Peterson.
There is some John Lester news, and it's not good. We'll discuss it a little bit next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.